ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, the Prime Minister Anthony Albanese is in Malaysia for the ASEAN summit on the final leg of a meeting with regional leaders in Southeast Asia, where he met the new Japanese Prime Minister, Sanae Takaichi, on the summit's sidelines. And he's announced that she has invited him to visit Japan. He says discussions were positive and constructive, and that Australia's $10 billion purchase of a new fleet of warships from Japan is important.
She has invited me to come to Japan. Of course, the Megami frigates that we are purchasing are going to be very important. We not only will be purchasing frigates, we'll be producing frigates as well, with the support and know-how of our friends in Japan.
He also met with President Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. of the Philippines, along with other Southeast Asian leaders. Here at home, however, he's come under attack from opposition leader Susan Lee. Did you see that picture of him wearing a black T-shirt with the cover art from the British band Joy Division's Unknown Pleasures album? I mean, you might have not have known all that, but you would have seen him getting off the plane wearing a black band T-shirt. It was a Joy Division T-shirt after he returned from the US. More on that in a moment. But joining us for Nightlife News Breakdown tonight, we have Peter Geeran, Editor-in-Chief of The Mandarin, the website covering news and business focused on the public sector, policy and government. Peter was previously Assistant Editor of the Sydney Morning Herald and the Sun Herald. Peter, good evening to you and welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you very much, Philip. Glad to be here.
Let's start with the ASEAN meetings. The Prime Minister's He's having some diplomatic wins, successful meeting with Donald Trump, now a chat with the new Japanese Prime Minister, an invitation to meet in Japan. Australian-Japanese relations are good, trade and militarily too, by the look of it.
Yeah, it's certainly been a very fruitful time for our Prime Minister, who seems to enjoy strutting the world stage. He was hailed in the UK, successful trip to the US with Donald Trump, and now he's in Asia. And while he emphasised Australia's purchase of those Japanese frigates was an important investment in the relationship between the two countries, he also took the chance to shut down any suggestions that Japan might be a fourth player in the AUKUS alliance, saying it would remain an agreement between the US, UK and Australia. But his main message in Malaysia is that Australia is looking to diversify its trade and investment in Southeast Asia, which, of course, is the fastest-growing region in the world and a place where we've doubled our trade over recent years. But he also made the point of saying that the region must uphold international rules and norms, which is interesting because it obviously helps us retain, if we can retain a fair and free trading arrangement so we can compete on a level playing field. But his trip, his world tour continues tomorrow, Philip, in South Korea for the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit. So the show goes on.
Yeah, I mean, it all seemed like a lot of glad-handing and backslapping in ASEAN, and all that's good. We want to be friends with everyone, of course. There was a fair bit of critical mineral deal sharing going on, apparently, with all parties, the US included, in ASEAN. Since the Chinese trade bans, of course, we've seen it very necessary to try and diversify trade. So seem to be signs that that might have been successful partly, do you think?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that because, you know, there was a with the conversation between, you know, potentially between China and the US about if China may lift their critical minerals kind of sanctions, I guess you'd call them, whether the Australia deal with the US might fall over. But Albanese made very clear today that would make no difference to Australia. So, you know, it's certainly critical minerals have been a very important part of our bargaining chip, if you want to call it that, in the world. And, you know, I'm sure that, you know, Albanese sort of strutting around the place is probably making it clear that China isn't the only game in town when it comes to that.
Yes, well, and I'm back on the Japanese frigates, of course. I mean, the one thing you can be sure of, being Japanese manufacturing, they'll be here on time and on budget, I presume. Does make you slightly nostalgic for many years ago when we contracted, at one stage didn't contract, but we were quite interested in buying Japanese submarines too.
No, exactly. I was amused this evening when I saw the interview when Trump and the Japanese Prime Minister were speaking, and he said to her that, of course, you know, US makes the best war machines in the world, and I'm sure that she might have thought in the back of her mind, well, actually, we don't do a bad job either, to be honest.
Yes, that's probably true. Meanwhile, back in Australia. Yes, Joy Division's classic there, Love Will Tear Us Apart, from 1980, and Anthony Albanese is, of course, doubtless a fan. In fact, he's got the T-shirt to prove it. Opposition leader Susan Lee trying to shepherd her party in the Nationals through a policy review to come up with viable voter-appealing policies, all the while keeping the coalition together with little or no help from the likes of Barnaby Joyce, Matt Canavan, Andrew Hastie or Jacinta Nampajimpa-Price, has jumped on the Prime Minister and the wardrobe issue as she sees it. Mr Albanese, as we know, stepped off the plane back from his US trip. He was just getting off the plane. He wasn't meeting anybody, but he was wearing not a suit, not smart casual, but wearing the Joy Division T-shirt. Now, Susan Lee's accusing him of showing a profound failure of judgment because, she says, the band's name apparently derives from the name of a wing of a Nazi concentration camp where Jewish women were forced into sexual slavery, just in case you weren't aware of that. And I guess 99% of us were not. She says the Prime Minister was previously told about the dark origins of the band, her words, during a podcast appearance in 2022, and cannot claim ignorance in choosing to wear it publicly during a time when anti-Semitism is in the news. Yes, well, this is Susan Lee and the brouhaha as she sees it.
For the Prime Minister of this country, in full knowledge of the meaning behind the name of this band, to choose to wear this T-shirt is an insult to all, and it fails the basic tests of leadership.
It was a curious thing, Peter, wasn't it? Is it a poor clothing choice, or is she barking up a very odd tree here?
Well, I mean, it's hard to believe he wore that T-shirt intentionally, I guess, given the sensitivities involved. And, you know, we all know how much he loves his music, and he has worn that T-shirt quite a bit, I think, even between the time he allegedly found out about it and now. So it's obviously a bit of a favourite T-shirt, and maybe he's just tired from all the trips he's been doing and he's run out of clean shirts.
Maybe he just likes Joy Division.
Maybe, yeah. But, I mean, he certainly would have known there would have been photographers taking photos of him getting off the plane. So, you know, it's hard to say that he was surprised that a photo of him wearing that particular shirt was a thing. I personally think, of course, that Susan Lee is pouncing on this because she's looking for any opportunity to paint Albanese in a bad light. You know, something to kind of suggest that he makes poor judgments. But I think there is definitely an element of trying to deflect a little bit of the attention away from the issue she's got. I mean, she's got Barnaby Joyce, who's such a sideshow for the Nationals, and having to deal with her own recalcitrants such as Andrew Hastie. So, I mean, the coalition's such a long way from agreeing on so many policy positions and issues that are of consequence to this country. I think she's probably clutching at straws.
Yes, Michael McCormack, the former Nationals leader who was deposed from that position by Barnaby Joyce in 2021, has been opining on Barnaby. Well, most people have been. But Michael McCormack says he's not defecting to One Nation anytime soon. I don't know whether he's got some special line in to Barnaby or not. He said he would rather have seen Barnaby join them all in the National Party's party room meeting.
I've always believed that life is determined by those who turn up, and it was a shame he didn't turn up to the party room meeting yesterday. We had a good discussion about net zero. Some of the plans that Matt Canavan and Ross Cadella put together were put to the meeting, just the initial draft plans, and a lot of work has gone into that report. It was a shame that Barnaby wasn't there to hear it.
Peter, there are no challenges to David Littleproud right now, but you do wonder if Michael McCormack, who was always peeved that he lost out, might be having a twinkle in his eye? contemplating another leadership tilt, do you think?
Oh, help us. I mean, I don't think anyone can get a good read on what's going on with the Nationals. I think the one thing you can probably be sure of is that Joyce and McCormack are united on one thing, and it's a dislike of David Littleproud. It's hard, you know. McCormack says he wants Joyce to be part of the team, although it seems like Barnaby's doing everything he can to undermine the Nationals and the coalition, and maybe that suits McCormack at this time. I mean, it's hard to see that McCormack is the shining knight who can lead the Nationals to relevancy, you know, given his past and also given the current turmoil that the coalition is in, and that the Nationals seem to be stirring at every opportunity.
Mm. Yep. All right. More ruminations tomorrow, no doubt, from the national story. All right. Some worrying news from the metals industry. More than 1,000 jobs are at risk as Australia's biggest aluminium smelter, the Tomago smelter, Tomago Aluminium, has started talks about its potential closure. Now, it's majority owned by Rio Tinto. The management says high energy costs has forced the government to consider ending its operations when its current electricity supply contracts expire in 3 years' time. The federal government saying nothing is off the table in talks over a bailout. The Defence Industry Minister Pat Conroy has told Parliament today that the government is working to find a solution to keep the plant running and keep workers in jobs.
Yeah. We're working very hard with the state government in Rio, and we've said that every option is to be considered. Nothing is off the table, and we're working very hard because, as we said, the hunt has been very good to Rio, and it's time that Rio is good to the hunter.
Well, the Energy Users Association of Australia said it was unimaginable that the smelter was threatened with closure because it couldn't contract affordable energy in a country with abundant energy resources. Does seem puzzling, I think, to many people. However, Tomago Aluminium said that based on market proposals received to date for replacement power supply, the cost of either coal-fired power or renewable energy would leave the smelter unviable. Peter, what's going on here? Are they just making an ambit claim in advance of the expiry of their energy contract for a better deal from the state government?
Well, I mean, it seems like if these corporate entities go into enough trouble, then the government will come running after them to make sure that they hang around. It's
well, they have
really
they have so far, haven't they? Whyalla,
they have.
In Tassie in South Australia with zinc and with in Queensland as well, they've come to the party. So, you know, Tomago would be the last in a fairly lengthening queue of industries sitting for asking for a bailout.
Exactly. And, you know, wouldn't you? I mean, the last time I think we were talking was about Glencore and, you know, the amount of money that they needed the government to stump up so that they could keep their facility going. And now we've got Rio Tinto. It's hard to think they're hard up for a buck. But, of course, you know, they're a business too, and they've got to make decisions based on each individual unit that they have. So I guess, you know, this is, though, of course, critical to Australia's national interests, it seems, you know, and the growth of our and manufacturing industry, which is something dear to the government's heart, you know, talking about Australia First. And so, you know, they've got the government over a barrel to a certain extent, I think, in terms of, you know, wanting to kind of have a handout and make and ensuring that at least the government will come to the table. Because I think there is there's a consultation process that's set to run for about another 3 weeks. So I'm sure there's a bit of negotiating to go. But I think the broader issue here, Philip, is how they can bring power prices down. Because ultimately, this is going to be something that's going to be a big factor for a lot of these corporates who are, you know, coming off their power deals and they're having to renegotiate. And, of course, they're looking at higher prices going into the future, not lower prices, which is something, of course, the government promised some time ago. And renewables just haven't come online to the extent that allows those prices to drop. So there needs to be some kind of really fast solution from the government here in terms of giving industry a bit more stability around power prices.
Mm. All right. Look, Peter, one that might particularly interest readers of the Mandarin, I guess, the Centre for Public Integrity has urged the government to reset course and honour its commitments to upholding transparency. It's outlined its concerns, particularly the government's proposed changes to the Freedom of Information Bill, as well as a culture of jobs for mates and a failure to rein in lobbyists. However, Labor Senator and frontbencher Don Farrell says he doesn't agree with the Centre for Public Integrity's assessment and cites changes to political donation disclosures ahead of the next election as evidence of moves towards transparency.
When you go in to vote at the next election, you'll know exactly who is supporting the candidate you're contemplating voting for. So that's just one example, I think, of where this government has been very transparent and will continue to be very transparent.
Well, he's over-egging the thing here, isn't he? Peter, for heaven's sake. I mean, disclosure laws about donations are pathetic. The government could be doing a lot more, couldn't it?
Absolutely. It's so funny that Don Farrell uses that example to show transparency. All it does is reinforce the primacy of the two major political parties. So it's hard to see how that's doing much for transparency. I think Philip, the thing that stings Labor the most with this report is that it says the current government's worse than the previous government. And they always were banging on about how they weren't very transparent. So it's a hurtful thing, I think, that they're having to deal with here. I mean, talking about those FOI laws, there was a Senate committee meeting a couple of weeks ago that was looking at the amendments, and the idea is that they want to bring in an application fee and ban anonymous requests so public servants would have to deal with fewer abusive and vexatious requests. But no one can provide any evidence this is actually happening. So it's a ridiculous situation. It's clear that, you know, apart from all the things you mentioned there about jobs for mates and not being transparent, the other issue, of course, is that the government's been chastised for failing to adequately protect whistleblowers, which is a very big deal for a lot of people, not just in the public service, but across all industries. So, you know, I think the whole thing's a bit like the National Anti-Corruption Commission, I think, which came in with great fanfare. But now it's seen as all fur and no trousers. You know, where's the accountability? You know, what have we signed up for? We don't seem to be getting what we asked for in the first place.
No, I'm not the first to observe that modern capitalism arcs towards monopoly. you might say that modern governments arc towards secrecy as well. They're not interested in letting you know what's going on because they don't want you to.
Exactly.
All right, Peter, good to talk with you. Peter Guerin's been our guest, Editor-in-Chief of The Mandarin, leading the Nightlife News Breakdown tonight. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, Philip.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.